Hey, good morning.
Good afternoon.
Food in his mouth on good afternoon. Good evening.
Good night.
Yeah, and
I'm a fish witch.
He types in a fish witch, and I'm doing a coconut water. And Saif, how you been?
Really good.
Yeah? You busy? You're hard at work at MTV2?
Well, yeah. Third-party entity.
Oh, you're working for the production company.
Yeah.
But are you guys in the building?
A show. I'm helping produce the show Joking Off on MTV2.
And what's the show about?
Never seen Joking Off?
No.
It's like, it's been on. This is the second season. This first season was on. It's like they... You know what At Midnight is?
No.
You watch At Midnight on Comedy Central? All right. Well, it's like a younger At Midnight. They show funny pictures from social media, and there's three teams, and they run out and tell a joke about it.
Oh, so it's improv.
One-liner.
Improv-ish.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I'm... Oh, shit. That's how I got the job.
And as a... Oh, they wanted you because of your improv skill set.
Well, they needed someone who knew urban culture, had ties with artists, did comedy, and knew about improv. I was like, oh, so you're trying to hire me.
Only me.
You want to hire me, or you want to hire three guys and combine them
to try
and make them into me?
But that is really true. I mean, that is literally
true. No, they wanted to hire me.
Like, all right,
what they were describing.
Real quick story, 2-minute story before we get to our guest. I just want to tell you because I thought you'd be amused by this. So you remember I had that audition for a TV show, and then I had a callback.
Yeah.
I think I told you.
Yes,
with the
four people.
Yes,
male view.
Yes, well,
fat boy view.
No, multi ethnic, multi sex view. So, the week was, you know, it was a Saturday. I had a gig in London. Sunday, Summer Jam. Monday, L.A. for this thing.
Yeah.
6 a.m. flight after Summer Jam.
Yeah,
not pleasant.
Yeah, must be amazing.
It was fantastic. Felt like shit. Get there. Like, you know what? I'm just going to power through and kill this shit. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. I'm hyping myself up. I'm literally watching wrestling promos in the dressing room to get myself hyped up.
Hype,
like,
right?
Whatever I can do. Because it's rare that fatigue affects me like that, but I had like a pounding headache. Like, I just did not have enough sleep or energy. So I'm like, I'm going to do it. I get there. I go in at 11:30. I went in for 5 minutes. I did like one round. And they're like, all right, great. They take me upstairs. They take you upstairs to the holding room. That's where they take you when you're still alive. If you're dead, they show you to the elevator and it's a wrap. I didn't get it. It wasn't a wrap. I went upstairs.
This sounds good.
Start talking to people. There's, again, more random people in the room this time. Just a variety of people. The dude from Loveline, not Dr. Drew, but the other dude who's been doing Loveline for years was there. Really cool dude. He was telling me stories. He's been at K-Rock forever, so he was telling me stories about the beginning of Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla. I'm having a good conversation. Look, it's 12:30. Okay, lunch is over. They start doing more people. Okay, it's 1:30. All right, so, you know, they should bring me back in. Obviously, they brought me back out here. Saif, now, before you go to one of these callbacks, I don't know if you've had the situation, they make you go through an actual contract negotiation. So
oh, yeah.
If they want you, the deal's done.
No, done.
So we, keep in mind, my agent and my brother were hard as shit on the deal because they had a lot of restrictions, and I've been doing this new stuff with ESPN. I don't know where anything's going. I want to keep all my options open.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of fighting that could have easily made them say, you know what? Fuck it.
Yeah.
You're just not worth it. Yeah. We want you, but there are other people. And
right.
I wouldn't have been mad because it was so tough to get there. But no, they worked it out. We want to get you here. Come there. So I'm there. 1:30. 2:30. 3:30.
What kind of room are you
4
in?
4 o'clock. This big room with just tables and food.
Okay.
Other people aren't coming back. The room's getting thinner and thinner. So I'm like, well, I'm still in it, but they're not seeing me perform. So what is going on? At 4:30... I still haven't gone in. I now go downstairs like, all right, it's time for you to go. I should tell you that at one point there, they did tell me to go downstairs like it was my turn. And when I was about to walk in there, I'm like, oh, sorry, not you. And then I go downstairs. Juliana Rancic's there.
Don't know what that is.
The skinny chick from E. The really skinny chick who does all the red carpet stuff on E.
Yeah, tall.
Yes, sort of funny.
Does stuff with Terrence. She might be on Fashion Police.
Exactly.
Okay.
She got in trouble recently because she talked about that girl's hair.
Yeah.
So, Zendaya. So, anyways. So, I'm talking to her. She went to my rival high school. We're chatting up. But I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, it's 4:45. This ends it.
She's in the competition.
Yes.
The show? Okay.
Terrence J was there that day, too.
Okay.
Where I'm like, it's 4:45. This thing ends at 5 o'clock. They've seen me once for 5 minutes. This isn't good. I went in there. I did one more round. The round of auditions.
What is the round? What are you doing in the room?
You sit at a table.
By yourself?
No, with the other people who you're paired up with.
Right.
My group is me, Juliana Rancic from E,
mm-hmm.
and Deion Sanders.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Love Dion. And I did 5 minutes, and they're like, all right, that was great. And I was like, okay. And if they do that, I just know it's over. Like, right. there's, it's obviously over. This was supposed to be them figuring it out.
Right.
They basically, Deion Sanders is one of my all-time favorite athletes. I basically just jobbed out to Deion, because when Deion went in at like 1 o'clock, they never took him out of the room. Deion never left the room.
Jobbed out. I never heard that.
That's
before.
Wrestling talk.
Yeah, I figured.
I just lost to him. I did the job. So like, I did 10 minutes so the entire day.
He was in the early runnings with you.
Keep in mind, he wasn't at the first one. They were like, oh, we're only bringing back 20% of the original people who auditioned.
Right.
But they didn't tell me they were also bringing in a bunch of major big names now.
So Deion Sanders, so he's trying to be the next
Michael Strahan. And I'm like, you know, it made me realize
Strahan's killing it.
Oh my gosh. But it made me realize, like, you guys are obviously, and one of my concerns about even signing an exclusivity thing with a TV show like this is, you know how far away it is. When all they agreed to is a pilot, you're so far away from anything happening.
Yeah.
You need a pilot. And with these syndicated shows, they then do a 13-week run to see how it is.
Right.
Then if they like you, you wait like 7 months and then the show starts.
Ugh.
Like, remember MC Search had like his run last year?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happened with that?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. But anyways, that was a long way of saying that Deion Sanders stole my job and it's over for me.
He got the pilot.
I know he got it. Yeah, I'm sure he did. Him and this other dude who's from radio, this guy Bobby Bones, who was really good. Also,
did the show skew older?
That's what I was thinking. I was like, I thought you guys had me here because you wanted like young, could cross over urban like that.
Yeah.
And then you went with Deion, who I love on TV, by the way. I think Deion's great at his football stuff. But he's like a 45, 47-year-old sort of conservative southern dude. Like, you know, it was just one of those things. I'm like, why was I even here? I could have just... But this is the plight, Sife.
Wow, you got to go through it.
We're going to get... And I was bummed out that day, and they're like, dude, there's going to be many more like this where you show up and do something and don't get
it's funny because I'm on the other side of it now, right? I'm bringing in people to do auditions, and I'm watching them do auditions, and then I'm like, dog, what was that?
That's got to be a weird feeling
it's
for you,
so
too.
It's so weird.
Because you're also auditioning for things. And
exactly,
and you're also,
so, and but it's so different being on the other side, man. I've learned so much in a week and a half.
Just seeing what other people are looking for.
I will
for.
Never go into an audition unprepared again, ever, ever, never again.
Why? Because the second someone does that, they're like, ugh. Or you're like that. You're like, get your shit together, bro.
I'm like, I sent you the shit, like.
Yeah, WWE is doing their Tough Enough show, which is the reality show again. And they like took like 12,000 contestants. They narrowed it down to 40. And then they ran a special about the 40 they picked. And this one guy gets in the ring. And they're like, so tell us about your love of WWE. He's like, I'm not really familiar with it. You know, but it sounds cool. They're like staring at him. All pro wrestlers staring at him like, really? Not really familiar. He's like, nah. It sounds cool, though. They're like, okay. Hey, Syfe, this is Juan Eperuski, one we talked about for a long time. And what do you want to say about this guy before we bring him on? Your friend.
Nothing.
All right, cool. Thanks for coming, Bobby. Bobby,
awesome.
Bobby Condor. So, okay, just tell people this. If they've never even heard of Bobby Condor.
All right, Bobby
Condor.
What's
the first thing you say about Bobby Condor to someone who doesn't understand?
The guy who ran the reggae show on Hot 97 for the last 20 years, Bobby?
Yeah.
About 20 years.
But it's not really reggae no more. It's kind of reggae, hip-hop, mainstream.
Okay, so before the last 2 years, before that, him and Jabba, Massive B, had the reggae show on Hot 97, and it's been nothing but fire coming out of those speakers.
And what are their parties like? Because they do a lot of parties as well.
Amazing. Amazing parties. Deep, disgusting, grimy, dirty Brooklyn parties, and dope, fire, I don't like to use the word commercial, but like
sexy
Caribbean parties, hole in the wall, little halls in Brooklyn to fucking Jabba or Bobby's birthday bashes, which is fucking 2,000 or 3,000 people. Crazy parties, artists.
And what about
on the Reggae Tip live concert that they do for Hot 97, which is like the Reggae Summer Jam.
And then also Bobby's role as a record label. He's a record label.
Massive B.
He's had Massive B Records for how long? How many years is that?
Over 20
years. And also just a guy, you know, the reggae world, it's I've been close to it enough to know that you have to be a special kind of person to be from the outside and be fully accepted and fully a part and a contributor of the culture. And Bobby has been beyond that. So we wanted to get in here, get you in here and talk to you a little bit, Bobby Condors. Where does the Bobby Condors radio DJ, more importantly, obsessed with reggae music kid, where does that story begin?
A long time ago, I mean, I just, you know, got, well, I was a music kid, like a lot of people, you know what I'm saying? And I was a vinyl junkie. So I was just into all kind of music.
Where, you know, where were you?
In the 70s, I was in Eastern Pennsylvania. And then I was just doing hood shit, street shit, got in a little trouble, you know what I'm saying? A little rest, lock up, ray. And then
Ray is the Jamaican version of like a blah blah blah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or a yada yada yada. I'll translate for
Thank
you.
Thank you. Anytime those come up, Cypher, we're gonna need you to jump right in.
Yeah, so I got, you know, did my thing, went to school, played a little ball, you know what I'm saying? Like I said, got in some trouble. But basically was a street kid, a street DJ, and then wound up in 85, you know, didn't really have nowhere to live, staying on my homeboy's couch in Brooklyn. And I wound up interning for BLS. And at that time, I was just Bobby Condors, the DJ. And they gave me some, let me to do some mixes. I used to be actually like Fred Bugs put me on. Bugsy, let me do some mixes. And I always incorporated, at that particular time, like New York radio was just starting to play hip hop mainstream, which was BLS and Kiss. And then they would play a reggae or two record, two in rotation. And then you had house music. House music was playing in the streets.
Speaking of house music.
All night long.
The wretched seed that wash chips to these.
Bobby Condors.
Of mothers crying for their young, swallowed up by the sea.
Oh, yeah.
This poem shall say nothing new. This poem shall speak of time. Time unlimited. Time undefined. This poem shall call names.
It's a long record.
Your brain.
I see.
This is 9 minutes. This is house music, deep house.
You produced this?
Yeah. That's Muda Bruca doing the poem. I took the poem and put the music together, and it actually got real big. It was a 12-inch I put out called Bobby Condors Massive Sounds, and I had an acid track on there. This was like a deep house track that would play in the New York scene in the 80s. The streets was running, you know, 80s, early 90s. Crack was in the streets. It was a total different scene. A total different scene in New York. After parties going on at 6, 7, 8 in the morning. You know, and I was living between Brooklyn.
And that record would play in those type of clubs.
Yeah, them after hour
what
parties.
Year, what year are we talking about?
I put this out on New Groove label in 1990, I think.
Is there a 45? Is it too long?
It's a 12-inch.
It's only 12-inch.
It's a 12-inch, and there was like four other versions on there. And I got pretty big in the house music world before I started Massive B. This as a DJ. I played in some of them trendy clubs in the late 80s, early 90s.
In the late 80s, did BLS ever give you your own slot? Or were you just helping out?
I had some, like, I would eventually do the Saturday Night Dance Party where I would play after Marley Marl. Since I was the assistant in there, I was giving Marley his record, so I knew Mr. Magic. I knew all the Big Daddy Kane, Biz Markie. I knew everybody, you know, Kumo D, LL, all them cats was coming by.
When Marley used to, he said Bobby Condors was in the library in the back.
Yeah, I was in the library in the
you
back.
You were the library guy.
I was the intern
How
in
much
85.
Do you have any records that came from that library?
A lot of them. I mean, you got to remember, in the late 70s, when rap first got on vinyl, I was getting every record. So, I mean, Rap-O-Matical 5, you know, Crash Crew, Tony Rome, you know, Treacherous 3, Spoonie G, New Rap Language, everything on Enjoy Records from Bobby Robinson. I mean, I'm a vinyl junkie. You know, when it comes to rap music, people don't even realize, no, I could tell you the beginning.
Yeah.
King Tim the Third, so forth. You know what I'm saying? All the Paul Wiley records, the break beats and everything, because obviously I produced reggae hip-hop, which was hip-hop stuff.
So you started, so even with that record, you literally took at the beginning like a reggae feel with the poem.
Yeah, and then from Muda Bruca, yeah.
And then you put it on top of what was at the time the sound
deep,
of
a deep, house,
deep
record.
House record.
Yeah, yeah. I was into dance music because I'm in all kind of music. People a lot of times, they just think they know about you, they pigeonhole you. You know what I'm saying? But I did a lot of different stuff. In 92, I did stuff for Super Cat. I did a record on, I was signed to Polygram, and I did a big reggae hip-hop record called Mac Daddy. You know, so
Mac Daddy,
and you know, Get a Red Hot for Super Cat. And it's funny, when I was doing this is right after the house stuff I did, Because I toured the world as a house DJ.
Really?
This Bobby Condors. I played at Ministry of Sound in 90 and did stuff all over there. Then I just said I wanted to start my reggae sound because I was still getting work this as a DJ, but I really wanted to have a hardcore reggae sound system. And I was...
Well, how did you even know that you wanted to do that? Were you going to, like, reggae parties?
Oh, yeah. I was from the early 80s.
Oh.
You know, were just interested? You just always liked it?
I always into the scene.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, probably this, you know, that one pale face in the dance. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, and I'd
the white,
see, I
white
saw,
guy. The
yeah,
white guy.
Pale face, yeah.
You know, like Biltmore Ballroom, seeing Shabba Ranks before he got a record deal, Barrington Levy, and the list goes on and on and on and on.
Now, in this era, well, first of all, I want to finish one thought you said that you didn't finish. We cut you off. You said they were playing one or two reggae records on BLS, and you were helping. Were you picking those records?
Yeah, I was Bugsy's right hand, so he was a music director, so I was in the streets. I was that in the streets dude. You know what I'm saying? I would just say, yo, son, this is popping off. Junior Reed, One Blood, Telephone Love, JC Lodge, or Audio 2 Top Billing. You know what I'm saying? Or a Big Daddy Kane record or whatever record we're playing at the time. You had Masters of Ceremony and so forth, so on. You know.
So you had a little influence there with
yeah,
Bugs.
Definitely. I see the record people. You know, they bring the vinyl and stuff and, you know, all of that
wow,
stuff.
So you were getting promos as early as the mid-80s. You were already on the promo game early.
Yeah.
Are your records organized from back then?
Some of them.
Some are organized, some are a disaster.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the reggae stuff is a lot of the 45s because that's kind of where I'm at.
So wait, that part is organized?
Sound like you want to go shopping.
Exactly. How much stuff, Bobby, do you... No, so late 80s, the reggae scene is like still a scene that there are way less white people in the scene now than hip-hop. Like, it's not even close.
Well, see, the thing about the reggae scene, a lot of people don't understand. There's two different kind of reggae scenes. You have the reggae dancehall scene, which is the hood in the streets. Then you have the roots rock reggae scene, which was more the people that would go see Bob Marley and, you know, when you'd be in the city, Steel Pulse, Black Aroo.
And they had enough pale faces there.
A lot of white people would be there.
Of course.
You know what I'm saying?
But in the dance
or even Hispanic and other people that were into the scene, but into the dancehall, in, you know, in the hood, in the ghetto, you know what I'm saying? You won't see so many
is
people.
Is it very different now than it was then?
I think, like, you know, you have...
There's some things that stayed the same.
Yeah, but we keep a dance. Massa B been playing in Brooklyn on Sunday nights for 20 years now, basically.
Yeah.
Other than that, one or two years, we went to try to do something
in
Manhattan.
City, yeah.
And then right. But... you see, like at say a Fire Sundays in Brooklyn where we keep our weekly party, you know, me and Jabba. You might
keep
see two.
Means have. To yeah. Have a party.
What do you
say? Keep a party.
Keep a party.
Yeah, like weekly party. Like two,
like
you see two or three white
fun.
People, one or two Hispanic, and then one or two, a couple Asian people because Japanese are very big into the scene. And it's, you know, the jump way to 2015, the scene has changed. You know what I'm saying, but
so how
know.
Are you?
But I'm not even talking. Sorry, I'm not even talking about like just the type of people. I'm talking about like the dancehall party format seems like it's something that kind of has stuck to its ways. Is multiple DJs or sounds playing the type of people like the joke of like Jamaicans always come mad late. Like that's not something new. That's been going on since.
Yeah, that's a culture, but I think. Now in America, as opposed to 95 or 2005, in 2015, I think the kids now that are partying, that are say maybe the 25-year-olds, the 28-year-olds, 27-year-olds or more, to me, are even more American Carib
right.
than they
yeah,
are
yeah.
Carib American.
So you're saying back in the 80s, 90s, they were like fresh off the boat.
When I started Massive B,
it was immigrants.
It was straight up like, yo, B, we really don't want to hear you on the mic. Like, you couldn't have no, like where some of the MCs sound almost Yankee-ish today on the mic.
Yeah.
It was some straight yard vibes.
Right.
Straight Jamaican vibes.
So they didn't even really want Jamaican-Americans on the mic like that.
I don't know. I'm just saying is, like, we were playing in hardcore Jamaican dances when I started this thing and we started getting rolling. Because you got to remember, I left BLS then and I started the reggae show on Hot 97. Flex linked me and said, yo, I want to do a reggae show. And Flex knew me from BLS because I knew Flex when he was in the rap group. What was his rap group?
Deuces
called?
Wild.
Deuces Wild. And he had his record, and I used to see him at BLS occasionally, you know? And that's how I got the new Flex. And then Flex became the man at Hot 103,
mm-hmm.
which became Hot 97. And he linked me around 93, maybe.
Of all the people that flexed, a Jamaican could have called. He calls the whitest man ever.
That was the only person he thought of.
But I was popping already because on BLS for a couple years, I was mixing for Pat McKay, doing the reggae show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we went over there, but not the jump.
No, I'm just fucking with you.
No, that's all good. What's her name? There was one kid I want to big up when we were doing, when I right after I did my, like my house stuff from 88, 91 or whatever, I started, you know, the reggae thing. We started doing a couple of hip hop remixes, and he was a kid at the time, a teenager.
We know where you're gonna go.
And he was carrying Chuck Chillout's records.
Of course.
And that's how I met him, was Salaam Remy.
Yes, who talked about you on this podcast at length.
Yeah, yes. And Salaam is my man, and we used to build it. That's how we did Ghetto Red Hot together, Dundada Hip Hop Remix together. We did Mac Daddy and some other work, and then, you know, Salaam was doing his thing, and I was doing my thing, and right.
How did those records go? Like, when you did the record with Salaam...
It's funny, but this is analog days now. So this is us at D&D Studio, you know... 15 hours straight, you know, getting in there at 7 p.m., working till 8, 9 in the morning, then I would go to BLS. I got the 24-track 2-inch from Supercat, and what I did is I think, did I even get I got the 20, yeah, the acapella, and I said, well, how are we going to do fly this acapella on the beat? You know what I'm saying?
And do you already know what beat you wanted to use?
We made the beat.
You made the beat first?
We made the beat first. We got the tempo. So we made the beat to match the reggae tempo. Mm-hmm. Right? So it might have been 92
beats. 99.
Was it 99 beats per minute?
Ghetto Red Hot?
Yeah.
Yeah, 99.
So we matched the tempo, because I told Salaam, I said, we got to match the tempo of the reggae dancehall song. And then what we did is I brought in, I had a half-inch 8-track, but it had a pitch control on it. So we bounced down the acapella, flat with no EQ, right? And then either we recorded it on a DAT or something, or we went straight to the half-inch 8-track. Right? And we went straight in, boom. And then what we did is, after the beat is playing, we got the hip-hop beat now. It's the same tempo, but I knew, you know, it's not digital. Things might be off a little bit. I mixed in the acapella on the beat on the 24-track now, on our hip-hop, if you follow what I'm saying.
You pressed play on the 8?
You got the acapella from the 2-inch.
Yeah.
Bounced it down to the half-inch 8-track.
Got it.
I got it on the whole half-inch, though, so yeah. All 8 meters are running. You right. Know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And then I had a pitch control on there, so I would have to try to time it when I'm hitting the start button, that the note is a millisecond. It's going to take time to fly it in. So now I would just have my headphone there, and I'm mixing it, and I would mix it in. And then...
Wait, play the original. You want to play the original first? Because I think it's so interesting here. Let's hear what the original... This is the original version you had that Supercat gave you first.
Yeah.
And how big was this record on its own?
In the dance hall, it was massive. Because Supercat was the Don. You know, he was crazy big. Him and Ninja Man at the time. Sometimes I'm back, some of them are rally back.
We are road boy, you tell me not take back a chat. Sometimes I'm back, some. And you know, of course, to my hip hop ears, I hear this version. I'm like, yeah, it's fine. That version's fine.
And that's when he just got signed to Columbia, basically.
Now this is the.
Now, this is what.
This is what we did now. Special dedication to all dogs of dogs, dedicated to all top dogs, Liberty Crew. Man called Tony Kennedy, man called Robert, and Wild Apache riding show. Curfew.
A little slower.
It's a little slower?
A little bit. Why didn't you run it through? There was no Simpty track?
I don't think when they gave me the 24 track 2-inch, I don't know if they had it printed as Simpty.
Yeah, they might have built
the rhythm.
When right
they built
on the track.
The rhythm is the beat, and they just probably
ran it. Hey. I'm doing the translations here, buddy.
and they did the rhythm. They probably went straight to 24 track. Then they probably played the bass line live off
right.
of the, which was they used to use back then, the Yamaha CZ-101 to get that sound. And then I just got the acapella. Like I said, bounced it to the half-inch A-track. I knew my half-inch A-track had a pitch control, so I just mixed it in like a record.
Crazy.
And then we just mixed the song.
So
and
crazy
the
how
voice.
People do it now, right?
Oh, like, so easy now.
So easy.
So easy. I taught myself how to like engineer, because after all of that, I made some money. I put my studio in Bed-Stuy in my apartment, and I had a 24-track, 2-inch machine, 24-track Allen Heath board, and I used to put the mic in the kitchen, and that's when I started Massive B, my label, and I used to just, if I didn't go to Jamaica, I would voice the records in the kitchen, and I had records with Johnny Osborne, Shabba, Bounty Killer, Beanie Man, everybody.
And they would come through your kitchen and perform there and do it there or no?
Yeah, they would voice the records there.
In your kitchen?
Yeah.
Voice means record.
Thank you,
record
sir.
The vocals.
Thank you, sir.
Record the vocals, yeah. Or then now that you're going into 93, 94, 5, I got an apartment in Kingston. I used to rent an apartment from Burrow Banton's sister.
Of course.
You know, kind of in the hood. And I used to be down there all the time. I used to leave Fire Sunday, catch a plane, and rare it, you know.
All right, so two questions. One, do you have any stories? Did anyone give you a hard time early on? And second of all, tell us about when you first started going to Jamaica and taking this thing to a different level.
Well, like, how are you getting on these parties?
Yeah, like, no one questioned you? No one
was on the radio, though?
Yeah, we was on the radio on Cat Tune. We had the hype. I mean, we was, you know, I was bringing Jabba, you know what I'm saying? And
a young,
he was a
young
teenager.
Jabba.
Yeah. And, no, I mean, you, anything you do, I don't care if it's with whomever, you know what I'm saying? You're going to have hate. You know what I'm saying? If you're going to shine, you come to fuck the dance up. You know what I'm saying? I don't care if it's a reggae hip-hop dance, a reggae soca, whatever the fuck, who you playing with or whatever. It's still, there's a thing when you leave that dance, oh, I fucked it up more than him. It's in your brain. If you're a competitive motherfucker, you know what I'm saying? Since we can curse on this motherfucker.
There you go, exactly,
let me be
Bobby.
Natural.
Go fucking
let me
ham.
Be natural in this motherfucker.
Yeah, be natural.
You know what I'm saying?
So you didn't,
pardon me, boo. Yo.
So you didn't think about it, talking to G-Code. So you didn't think about it being...
listen to me. Like, from growing up in the hood and being in the streets and just being on the playground, I got in fights with a lot of motherfuckers just because they didn't like the way I looked. So I didn't give a fuck. You know what I'm saying? I didn't give a fuck. I did my street shit. I got my Ray, got a little trouble here, there. Didn't do what I had to do. Clean myself up. Boom. So when it just came to this little soundboy shit, I was like, whatever, man. Let's do it.
Did the girls take you seriously?
See,
off top? Or do they kind of be like, ah, you're white?
Well, the thing about it is, like, in the 90s, it was more of a gangster time, I feel. And then I kind of looked a little standoffish. I kind of had a beard and long hair and one or two little dreadlock, and I would look a little kind of real.
That guy looks crazy.
Yeah, a little crazy looking. So it was like, I had a standoffish look, but it kind of worked for me because familiarity breed contempt. You know, when people feel like they can approach you, or they think you might be a little tender, you know what I'm saying? Boom. But if they feel like, damn, don't fuck with son. He loose. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So, and then them time there, all through the 90s, we was walking heavy. Cats was prepared. You know what I'm saying? So it was nothing.
You're saying they had firearms.
Thank you. I got that part too. Okay, but hold on, you didn't answer the question though. But were these chicks, were you fucking out there, Bobby?
I was doing my thing, yeah.
Like, people were fucking with you.
Come on, man. Yeah, you go wherever you go. One thing I learned, wherever you go in the world, there's going to be women that's going to gravitate, son. You know what I mean?
Well, when you're a leader, when you're a leader of men, which is what you were doing, when you were dominating the dance like that.
Well, you know.
Chicks want to fuck the guy who's running the dance. Am I right, son?
Well, I'm not saying right. I was the hot boy. Jabba was the hot boy. He had the cars. That was his lane. He had the jewels. I don't believe in that jewelry shit and all that extra shit. You know what I'm saying?
Did you find Jabba?
I met Jabba in the Bronx. I played it. I was supposed to clash a dude, right? So I came from Brooklyn with this one Rasta dude. I was supposed to clash this radio boy. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Two hot radio boys. That was actually Shaggy's producer, Sting International.
Mm-hmm.
He never came to the dance.
Uh-oh.
You know what I'm saying?
You're scared.
So
just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Nah, it's my man, but he never came. So I played at the dance, and I see this little obnoxious motherfucker. You know what I'm saying?
At the party.
But I had my hood bitches with me from Brooklyn. You know what I'm saying? They're like, "Yo, what's wrong with him?" Said, "We ready to cut him." You know what I'm saying?
What do you mean, height? What was he doing?
He was just obnoxious, like trying to get on the mic or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
How old is Jabba at the time?
He got to be 17.
Dangles.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? But I had
Dangles
my
is dead.
I had my Bed-Stuy bitches with me, and this one chick that used to live with me, and she was a soldier. You know what I'm saying? And
his name was Jabba at the time?
I think so. So we just started, you know, I said, "Yo, but you know what? As obnoxious as he was, and me being older, I said, I kind of respect that because he was hungry." You know what I'm saying?
Oh, such a fine line. Because some guys like that, because some people like that just turn out to be pieces of shit.
No, but you got, you know.
And he turned out to be a great dude.
Incredible. And the thing about it was I was starting my sound. And people realized I was starting my sound, and a lot of cats wanted to get on. But now, like when it comes to dub plates and having a voice, dub plates for your sound, that's where you have to go to Jamaica, voice the artist where they call your name. You know, Massive B, or Ray, you got to call your name. You got to pay for that shit.
Of course.
So you have to build a relationship who you fucking with working, because you can't do everything by yourself. And we just built, and it just, you know, it became a family.
So, like, what do you think Bobby's level of his collection of dub plates?
Oh, no. Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
I got mad hip-hop cats, too.
Okay, you know all the dubs I have, which is a good amount.
Yeah, you have the people from the mid-90s on?
Nah, probably 2000.
2000?
2001 is when I kind of started. The dubs that I have, which are pretty good, all because I was on Hot 97.
Of course.
So imagine, and that was me once in a while trying to get a dub every 6 months because I had a Bobby Connors party or a Jabba party and I wanted to make a splash. This is the guy. This is the guy. They're probably sending him dubs after dubs.
Nah, well, the thing about it is they knew we were the foreign sound. That means you're not from Jamaica. You're from New York.
He's supposed to translate. Saif, come on. You got to jump in faster. Yeah.
So
when they come a foreign.
When he come a foreign,
they
knew,
they said all that Yankee, they taxing. They taxing. You know what I'm saying?
So did they try to tax you?
I'm talking about taxing the voice to dub. I wasn't getting them for free.
Ooh, but I
spent probably $500,000 on dub plates.
All right, write that down as a quotable. Mm-hmm. Well, you're a little quotable.
You know, I'm talking about from the 90s, from early 90s. Yeah, I'm going to go to Jamaica with 10G in my pocket and just lock in the dub studio.
How'd you get the 10Gs? That's what I need. I need to learn that secret.
How about the 10Gs?
That's a different argument. Everything for the air.
Argument is a conversation.
Right, of course. But
I'm shocked. To keep your shit popping, to keep your sound popping, or you as a DJ popping, you got to have the hot dubs. You know what I'm saying? Especially in the 90s.
Who was the first big one you got?
Barrington Levy, favorite singer.
What song?
Tell Them Already, Woman, Tell Them Again. Mm. Then I got Murderer and I got everything.
Ooh.
You know, everything. I mean,
you still have all of them? You know where they are?
I got the dub plates and I got majority of them. Because you got to remember, I'm a rubber dub dude. I love rubber dub reggae music. So I voiced a lot of cultural reggae music that don't even play, say, in Jamaica or in New York dance hall. But when I go to Europe and
they
tour,
love it out there.
They love it, and that's...
Explain rubber dub. What do you mean? You mean like roots, culture?
More of the rubber dub slow reggae. The ching, ching, the reggae music. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Not dance
proper
hall.
Reggae
dance
music.
Dance hall is doom, 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 you know? So I'm that kind of dude, and then when I started my label, I produced a lot of cultural reggae rubber dub music, and what happened was the 45s started circulating the world, and I had the artists that a lot of people love. Now, I didn't always have the hottest up to the time artists in Jamaica, but I would voice the Ina Kamozi, the Half Pint, the Junior Reed, the Boro Banton, the Nicodemus, and they were on all my cultural rhythms. And a lot of times the cultural rhythms were maybe a relic of an old-time rhythm.
So then your dub plates would sell like new records?
What were the dub plates? These are the 45s on my label. Pressing.
Oh, okay, these are Massive B records you're making. Got it.
Massive B records. But the dub plates kept you hot in the hood, kept you hot in Jamaica if you played on big dances, kept you hot when you go to Japan or whatever, wherever you're going, you know, you squeeze off. Now, I got certain dub plates that nobody can get because the artists are dead or whatever, and I just know when I go to certain places around the world and I squeeze that, or when I play that, I'm fucking the place up.
I'm not going to warn you again, Bobby. I'm doing the translation.
Now, Bob... By the way, shout out to our boy Dom the Bomb, who's in the house with us too. And Dom, if you have any questions you want to throw in here, Dom is a reggae aficionado as well.
Yes,
you should
jump in. He is a remix king as well.
Exactly. You should jump in here.
I'm good.
You're Bobby Condors of Jays.
I miss working with my boy Dom the Bomb.
I know. He's one of the Dom is one of the few things to really miss.
Yeah, at Hot 97.
So no shots. So Bob, at any point did a time come when you didn't have to pay anymore, when they were just like, I'm just sending you a dub?
Well, certain artists would just, out of respect, you know, like as time go by, be like, yo, that youth there's real. He a real dude. You know what I'm saying? And then there's no that also, wow, this kid's a motherfucker, Hot 97.
Well, there's probably a lot of artists that were hot when you...
Hot before I got hot.
Right.
So they felt like, yo, that youth they have to pay.
Right. But then once you got hot and then you started breaking people's careers...
Some of them realized. Yeah. And that happened more... In the early 2000s on down. Because then after that, we kind of paid our dues. We had
like, have you ever paid for an Elephant Man dub? You couldn't have. There's no way you should have. You broke that guy.
I gave Ellie some paper over the years because he voiced a lot of records for my label or whatever. Right. Me and Ellie's cool. We good.
So that's different. That's more of you have a relationship. You have a camaraderie.
Like Sprague is a real dude. You know what I'm saying? I gave Bounty Killer a lot of money. You know what I'm saying? But Bounty in the 90s, you need it. If you wanted to get a bus, you know, buy it that this time, you know, Ray. But Killer's my man. It's all good.
And the upside, of course, is you may have spent upwards of $500,000 on dub plates, but these are still getting major artists who, if you went through the label to get a song from them, you'd be spending much more money than that.
No, I find with American artists, it's enough time you get the right link, they just doing it. You know what I'm saying?
As opposed to down there where it's like, nah, you need to put the cash in my hand. I need
because you got to remember, you coming off the plane from foreign, they're looking at like, yeah, this dude might play my record in foreign, but I live in Jamaica and times are hard on the boulevard in Jamaica. You know, not a, you know, this obviously it's 100 to 1 right now, the exchange rate. So back then it was 60 to 1, 50 to 1.
So when did you first go to Jamaica?
90. I never had money as a kid or as a young man, so I didn't come from that. So when I first got my passport, probably like, well, I got my passport before I went to Jamaica because I was DJing, but 1990, 91.
And you went and you stayed at Sandals. And you had a lovely time at the resort.
Oh, man, I wish. No, it's actually the first time I went to Jamaica was when that they had that big concert called Sting.
Of course, they still do.
With Ninja Man and Super Cat clashing.
Ooh.
That was intense.
And who took care of you the first time you went to Jamaica?
I just stayed in a hotel, and then I just, you know, had a link with the show and went to the show.
And at that point, did you know any artists real
well? Yeah, cats knew me from Brooklyn. Cats knew me from Brooklyn, so a couple cats would come and holler at me, and they'd see me there. You know what I'm saying?
Bobby!
You know, so they you know.
Did you feel at home?
I felt comfortable. I'm saying, you know, it's just still a different place, but I'm like, you know, I move in the streets and I'm not a hype youth. You understand what I'm saying?
He's not like a troublemaker. He's not out there talking shit about people.
Yeah, or I'm not extra hype like, yo, I need attention. I play my position, you know what I'm saying? And when it's my time to shine, I shine.
So it's interesting. So a friend of who Bobby and I have in common is Dr. Dredd, my old boss, who we got to get up here for stories one day too. But he writes about in his book, like, he's one of those people that, like, his love of reggae actually came the other way around. It came from him falling in love with
the Jamaica woman?
Jamaica, oh, okay. Period. Like, he went to Jamaica once and was supposed to come back and then was like, fuck it, and just let his visa go up and just stayed in Jamaica, you know, for months at a time, smoking weed and laying on the beach.
He had bread at that time.
Yeah, well, he was coming from Chevy Chase, Maryland. He's coming from where I'm from.
Where?
Chevy Chase, Maryland.
Where's that?
It's in Maryland, right outside D.C., where I'm from.
That's where he's from?
Yeah, you never been down there? You never used to go to the Ross?
Dr. Dredd or Chevy Chase?
Chevy Chase is not from there. Oh. Dr. Dredd is from there.
So that's an upscale area?
Yes. And that's, you never went to Ross Records, the actual building?
No.
So he had this building in Silver Spring.
Okay. I knew of the label, and somehow I met him and we got cool. You know what I'm saying?
Well, he's a cool
good
guy. Dude.
Yeah, good
guy. Well, here's the thing. Both of you guys.
Is he a pale face?
He's a pale face. Okay. Pale face of the century. Okay. Both of you guys, there is a certain thing that one of my favorite things about the reggae community in general is, like, there really is a certain, like, just how, like, in hip-hop there's real recognized real and people like people, but in reggae it's different because when you're really about it, the it translates differently. People are, like, really chill spirits, you know what I mean? Dr. Dredd's just a chill,
yeah, laid back dude.
Yeah. He doesn't, and like you, he's accepted. He spends no time trying to be accepted. Yeah, he's just Dr. Dredd. Everyone just calls him Doc. Like, he's just that
dude. You have to realize, too, as you grow as a man, regardless of where you come from, and obviously what you're trying to put across, the energy you're trying to put across, people are going to accept you or they're not. They may look at you and say, Peter Rosenberg. Certain people are not going to like you. Whatever you do.
Sorry, what?
Most of them.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever you do. You understand what I'm saying? So it's just like, if you know, as long as you're just being real to yourself, and that's just how the good
ultimately outweighs the bad, right?
Well, the thing about it is being a foreigner in a foreigner's music and a foreigner's culture, if you can't stand that heat, then you just need to get out the kitchen. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, the lane I'm in is the streets, but that's the lane I've always been in. So it's cool. I mean, when I started my label, I'm pressing records. I'm selling them out the back of my car. So I'm on Church Avenue, Nostrand Avenue. I'm going to every mom and pop record shop from Brooklyn, Bronx, the Queens, the Harlem, hitting rock and soul everywhere. And then I'm learning the business, and I got my UPS account, and I'm pressing them, and I'm exporting them to Europe. And one thing you have to learn, in every country in Europe, Japan, wherever, there's there was a reggae record shop, and there's an underground following. And then that's when I started touring, because my mix cassettes started going all over the world. And then the 45s was going all over the world. So if it didn't play in Jamaica, or maybe Cypher didn't play it because he was hating or whatever, I don't know.
Classic, vintage, you know. Typical.
But no, maybe it didn't play in the New York Dance Hall because maybe it was a cultural rhythm. I had Morgan Heritage and King Kong on it or whatever. Yeah. It played in Germany or France and Switzerland and Italy. And I've been going to
those
countries.
What's the biggest Massive B record? Well, Cypher,
well, it depends.
What do you think is the biggest Massive B record?
There's no way I could tell. I don't know.
I could say commercially in New York.
Come Around.
No, commercially in New York, I sold.
No,
that's not Massive B.
No, I sold Massive B label, but somebody else produced it. I put the 45
out. Yeah, but yeah, because I have the, I was just saying, because I have the record.
The 45 did good, but you got to remember, when I released on 45, the vinyl was slowing down.
It was already slowing down.
I released in 95.
Stupid pale face answer, Rosenberg.
Yo, I released in 95, Bounty Killer Suicide Murder, which is the number one in Jamaica, like on the dance hall. But then I remixed it because my friends from East New York, Blasey Blah, P.F. Cotton, and Martell.
Yeah.
They gave me their beat. And then the Danger beat, right? East is in my house, God. Yeah. And I put Suicide Murder on there.
Can you find that? Is that on YouTube?
And then I linked J. Rue the Damager is my friend. So I linked him and he came in and he did a verse on it. And I sold over, I sold over like 100,000 12 inches out of my car.
Whoa. That, you didn't do 45 for that? That was just 12?
I did 45 in Jamaica and I did 12 inch in America.
And but in the 45 in Jamaica, did you still have the JA version? See,
well, I got the JA version, yeah. But the thing about it is in Yard at that time, Sonic.
Okay, thank you.
Sonic, you had a distributor that was pressing your records. So a lot of times you know, if you press it yourself, you're gonna know you get a better number than when someone else presses it. America, we have a problem. No, wrong song. Come on.
No, that's a commercial.
Oh.
It's a commercial for a boxing match beforehand.
You know.
Here we go. It's it here, though. It's on
the
YouTube.
The hip-hop one?
Yeah.
Not a mercy.
Featuring J-Roo.
I wouldn't have tried it for him. Never fought five of us girls got a power. Not a mercy. Couple shot them block right. I'm going to tell them like a rain and storm and show. Not a mercy.
This played on Hot 97. In rotation.
Oh, my God. Suicide or murder. Them is jungle. This way them ya big land gun ya. Must the valley man them that can ya feeling gun. Oh, you don't look like a gas cylinder.
And you put in the Come Clean sample.
Yeah.
Woo.
Yeah.
From yard to broad, you know a warlord in them yard.
That's a cipher doublet.
Let them know.
Hello.
Spitful. Cipher sound, born as a murderer. All right.
Just in case anybody's listening.
Bye.
In case anybody's listening and want to test me, bitch.
Who do you have the best relationships with of the bigger artists?
But before
like
you
the
go
fat
there,
ones?
But before you, but
in size, yes.
Before you go there, I had a couple other. Mad big records on the label.
Continue on and please tell us.
T.O.K. Gaia lead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Richie Spice.
Big one down the bomb.
In the streets is getting hot. You so cool.
Oh, you did that?
Yeah. Richie Spice. And then I had one with Burro that did massive around the world.
Yeah.
Better than them.
Crazy.
And that was on, like, when I did Grand
Burro
Theft. Yeah, I did Grand Theft Auto in 08 and I had a massive B radio show. A lot of my songs was on there, but that song.
Did you do this?
Yo, road boy, I want a man out of Charlie.
Yeah, that's a remix we did.
Crazy. This, I used to play the shit out of it.
Yeah, because in the 90s, a lot of the songs we released, we would do a hip-hop mix.
Listen how nasty that fucking recording.
That's the 7 minutes of funk. I had to clear that sample.
You did?
Yeah.
Well, this is the original Burro Banton.
This is Boom With This. I did Better Than Them.
Oh, hold on.
Come on. Yo, Sy.
Wait, is that your rhythm?
Ain't no, that's Street Sweeper. That's Steely and Cleavy.
Oh, you're right. Sorry.
Better Than Them is the No Borders rhythm.
And what year are we talking about?
I released over 500-600 songs on Massive B. You know, like, you know, 30, 40 rhythms, 45 singles.
Now this is the original Burro Banton. Better than them, 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 better than them.
Mad. Hear the wicked part now. Hear the wicked part.
Better than them and grow rougher than them.
I gave you all these on 45. Come on, stop him, man. He stuck me up when he first came to Hot 97.
No, you actually.
I laced you.
I got to tell you, actually, before I even collected 45s, I was just being inquisitive one day with Bobby about his music. And the next day I get to the station, or the next week, and Bobby's on before me on Sunday nights, and he just left a bag. It was so generous of all of your 45s.
Well, I still
press
them.
That's the start of my collection.
For you.
Yeah, he just gave me all, like, 75 of them, like a nice stack. So you still press them up?
I still press them because I get orders occasionally because you have vinyl junkies around the world that want that Nicodemus, Suzy Wong, or they want, you know, some, like I put out the rhythm called the Cuss Cuss Rhythm with King Kong, which was in the reggae community. I got some reggae songs like King Kong, Rumble Jump Life. They're classics.
And where do you get the most orders from? Japan?
No. I mean, I got a guy in California named Ernie B and he sells them all over the world. And then I used to have accounts in Europe and so forth. But like the vinyl business, excuse me, is very, very slow now. So I just still got my catalog in stock, like 75% of it. I probably got 25 to 50 to 100 of each song.
Did you do a good job keeping original copies of everything you pressed or no? Did everything go?
Well, to me, if I'm still pressing it, that's the original copy.
You don't think about it like that.
You're
like,
looking at the first press?
Yeah.
The first, like,
although with Jamaican, with reggae records, it's so hard to even consider any, like,
you know,
to even get
caught
up.
Well, what I used to do, I don't know, I maybe got up to maybe 300. When I used to get the test pressing, I used to put it in a box. Like,
so the first few hundred, you have the test press saved.
Yeah, or if I didn't get a test, the original first batch, you know. I mean, but thing about what killed, like, the grassroots reggae label, the street label, you want to say, the internet. Once the internet came, my whole catalog's on the internet.
Yeah, this literally is on YouTube. Yeah, it says massive, you know, sound system. I don't think you're getting a check for this, Bobby.
No, you know.
Well, hold on, Saif. We should ask him. Bobby, do you have a YouTube account called Escort Boy the King?
Never heard of him.
Okay. But he has your logo on
but
there.
But I got a digital distributor, and they're supposed to be dealing with that. But, you know, that's
hard.
Know,
it's
yeah,
hard.
I mean, once you put a record out, it's up there, and people trade it.
So tell us about some of the personalities you've gotten to work with. You've worked with everyone. Well, no, first, wait, dumbest question in the world. Any relationship between all of the Bontons? Or is it just a name that, what does the name mean?
Well, Boro told me.
Good question.
Thank you.
Boro got that name from some gangsters back in the day. And that's what they gave him to him. They say, yo, your name Banton. Ray, 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 Ray. And that's how he got the name.
But let's go into the Ray, 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 Ray for a second. Because what do they actually mean? What does Banton mean? Does it mean anything?
They just gave him that name. I forget, tell you the truth, what it means. You know, it's just the name they gave
him. Is he the first one, though? Is Boro the first?
Boro was the first one that, yeah. And then after him, you had
Buju Mega.
You know, you had other guys who were like Skinny Banton and this one and that. A lot of Bantons. But Boro, from the 80s, Boro is the first, like the original Banton. You know what I'm saying? Boro Banton. And
maybe it means like, maybe it's like Gotti. You know how people, there's like a bunch of different Gottis.
Right, right. It's just
Irv Gotti.
Right, right.
Yeah, I'd have to ask Boro. I forget. He told me, man, because me and Boro are like brothers. You know what I'm saying? Like, I met Boro in 88, 89 in the dance. And one Christmas, he came and checked me and we popped champagne and voice dub plates. And from that time, we just started making moves together and voice and tune on my label and doing dub plates and touring all over the world together. And, you know, like, you know, staying with his peoples in Jamaica.
Do you have a relationship with Buju?
Yeah, we're cool. You know what I'm saying? He never voiced for me from my label, but I got a lot of dub plates with Buju. I got a lot of respect for Buju as an artist. I knew Buju before he was a Rasta man. You know what I'm saying? When he was doing the Gal tunes and Skin Out tunes and all that kind of stuff.
Well, he was like a pop artist in Jamaica?
He was like Shabba, you know, like we do the Gal thing, the, you know, the X-rated thing.
Okay.
Everything wasn't cultural. But, but I think what Buju probably as a kid emulated Boro. You understand what I'm saying? And that's, you know, they respected Boro coming from the original days. So that's where
people,
you know, they
to
picked it up. You know, it's like the ranking. You know, everyone took the ranking. So when people out of respect that, boy, I love Boro, Boro Bantarere, so then it's Buju and Mega, and it just let on. Yeah,
Saif,
Shabba, like the ranks, Shabba ranks and this ranks and that ranks.
Cuddy ranks. And what, Saif, you said the definition there?
Yeah, it said Banton in Jamaican slang means like storyteller.
Oh, okay, well, there it is then. I don't know, but I just know Boro told me some gangster started calling him because he was DJing on set. I forget what he told me his name was, whatever.
Maybe he was very storytellerish when he was
doing it. He might have just went by Boro and then said, nah, man, your name Banton or whatever, and that's just how the thing connected.
You didn't do Make My Day remix, did you?
No.
For Buju?
No.
Because it sounds, it's of that time, it's of this, it's a similar.
No, the biggest one, I did stuff for Cuddy and a bunch of other people. But it was for Super Cat, the Mac Daddy, you know, and then the Ghetto Red Hot at that time.
Wait, did you do the the Bounty Killer with the Shook Ones beat.
That was a cellular phone. No, Johnny Wonder did that, I think. Johnny Wonder. Johnny, yeah. The biggest one I did with Killer was Suicide Murder in 95. And then I did some others, you know, a Preston White label and so
forth. Who of that world, of the 90s dance hall legends, who would you say is the most interesting character that pops in your mind? That you just think.
Boy, see, sometimes them questions.
I don't, yeah.
They're not really. Boy, yeah, Bubba Khan, did y'all make fun of me? You know what I'm saying?
Interesting.
6 months later, yo, I'm here, y'all joke out my thing, youth. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
How about just interesting?
Like, I got calls because I said so-and-so is going to be the hottest dude. Then other cats was calling me or Jabba, really Jabba, say, yo, what's wrong with Bobby, man? Am my thing hot? You know, I'm not big me up. You know what I'm saying? So it's like there's a lot of cats is real sensitive. You know, but I would just say characters, right? Even before the 90s, one of my brethren used to come and just show me love and as a foundation and a wicked artist, and everybody knows him, and if you met him, you loved him, was Nicodemus. This come in, I'd have the white rum right in the kitchen there, right next to the microphone stand. We'd have the weed, you know what I'm saying?
Are you a big weed head, Bobby, or no?
I mean, I don't know what's considered a big weed head, but I can go through my periods of bunning it down, and I can ease off.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Got it.
Because it's been since teenage days. So it's been a long time.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? About me and you know, we used to smoke chalice back in the day and, you know.
Sife?
You know, like a bong, what white kids use, a bong. Rasta men use a chalice.
Yes.
Yeah. Like everyone's on this hooker thing now, whatever, whatever. But yeah, now Nicodemus, you know, I mean, Supercat's gangster. Burro is just like a real good
dude. Did Supercat ever talk about the time he almost kicked Cypher Sounds in the face?
Yeah, did he ever tell you that time?
No.
I was later in his career.
No, I got one too bad up still. He batted me up one time. You know, but big up Supercat.
But he gave you a smack?
No. I never gonna. No one ever touched me.
So what did you? What do you mean?
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? But I mean, big up the Apache. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you did better than Sife did. Sife almost got his head taken off.
Nah, he wasn't trying to kick me. I know. He was just letting me know that his foot can go to the height of my face.
Yeah. You know.
What about, how's your relationship with Cartel?
Yeah, Vibes was great, man. Cartel used to come check us in Brooklyn. You know what I'm saying? At Fire Sundays.
Prior to Fire Sundays. On the Eastern Parkway float. On the, truck.
Yeah, he used to come check us all
the
time.
Time I met him.
He voiced a lot of songs for my label. And he actually voiced a big song, Me Get Gal Easy, Fuck Them Easy, a week before he got locked up.
Yep.
Is that what you were going to ask, Tom? Yeah. Tom, what were you going to ask specifically?
No, I was going to say, he has like two,
a classic,
of them.
Yeah.
Two on that rhythm.
Yeah, on the Riot Squad rhythm, Get a Road.
Yeah, before he went to jail, he did two on that rhythm.
Wow.
Yeah, they're, I mean, you don't make much money, but they're classics. They're big, big in the dance, let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah.
This one.
Listen.
Yo, me get down easy, fuck them easy.
Oh, okay.
Then follow me like Twitter, then follow me like Jesus.
I will be girl to mama Duba.
That's for the girls.
It's a girl.
Let's go to the streets. Same beat.
We must survive.
It's gonna get grimy.
Society dark, me dark, but them not know me life. Them no know about get up road, sink and board. Pocket empty, guns them load. Them street, yeah, tough like stone. Make me tell about the place where me grow. Every day.
Yo, and a key side note to that, yeah. Since you're into the Asterix, the side note, Peter.
Tell me.
That the rhythm was mixed by the genius Stephen McGregor, but the vocals were mixed by Dom the Bomb.
Oh.
And flew in.
So basically, I have the a cappella of that record. So
I'll take
that.
You can do whatever you want. So I get the impression, without knowing, you know, I don't know as much about dancehall's hip-hop, obviously, but Cartel is one of those people that I get the impression that one of the fascinations with him is not only like the weird, interesting stuff, his, of course, him being away now, whatever happened there, and his...
That means he's locked up.
He's locked
he
up.
He got a 35-year bid.
A long bid.
But real talk,
He talked about bleaching his skin, but that's not the
he
stuff...
Did it, he did it for attention, he said. I remember when you guys asked him.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So, but
to me,
as an artist, incredible.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Talent.
But that's what I was going to say. I think, for me... A conversation pieces about him were always about that bullshit, but all the bullshit was indicative to me that is it me or is he one of those people who, aside from all the bullshit that happened, is like a freakish genius? Like he just
I
seems
think
like
I didn't realize he was so gangster, but He's gangster, but he is definitely incredibly talented.
Yeah, yeah, like he's a sick talent.
Incredibly. Like,
I'm telling you,
and this shit is educated. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you this. My goal one day in life is to get Eminem to do a record with Vybz Kartel. Probably not going to happen.
At this point, it'll be tough.
But if Eminem or somebody like that, like super lyrical, if you could actually understand what Kartel was saying without the accent and it was translated, you'd be like, holy shit.
Yeah, that's the impression I get from him. And he did a shitload of records. Like, how long was his run, the prime Kartel run?
2001. He's hotter now than, he's as hot now as ever. Three years in jail.
No, but he's saying when he started, like, early 2000.
When did he do Picture Me in them tunes?
I'll tell you when I put in my...
Like, early, mid-2000s, right? Yeah. And Take Buddy in them tunes. We got to remember, because he was running with Bounty Killer. So I guess he was doing some writing or whatever.
I loaded that song on my computer in 2005.
Yeah, so now...
So but, 10 years.
Yeah, but...
How is he still the hottest?
Before that.
But he kind of had a little simmer part, but then I think, the last 5, 6, 7 years, when he left dealing with Killer, and he started... Him and Killer had their beef.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Mavado jumped in the war. That's when he started his own thing, and he started the war with all of Killer's people. You understand what I'm saying? Lyrical war.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? And took it upon himself. And then he just started unleashing records, and he's still unleashing records. And
how are the records incredible... still getting unleashed? Well, he must have a voice thing
in on lockdown, and he just sending the acapellas or whatever. Because the records he's putting out still now are incredible.
So where do people get those records these days? Like, if you're into the dancehall scene and
this is like
same as hip hop.
It's just like online. It's like
blogs though.
No, yeah. No, but it's just like hip hop. It's like sometimes I'm wondering, how am I going to get this record? Like, I'm trying to get this Millie Rock record. I got it, but the quality is terrible. You know what I'm saying?
And you're like, who's working this record?
Yeah, like who is this? Not even working it. Like, because back in the day, you could, like, I'm going to go to a record store, Beach Street, downtown Brooklyn, or Rock and Soul, and get the vinyl because somebody would have pressed it up by now. You know what I'm saying? Or even if it's on white label.
So now fucking people don't know how to put out records.
You
know,
you just go to YouTube or whatever and you lift it. You know, or you go to Flex's Record Pool franchise.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
I don't know how the fuck those things get loaded there. A lot of shit is stolen franchise record pool, including a video of Flex that is repug.
Oh, that's kind of ancient.
He's like, the video, he's like, he must be 75 pounds heavier, and it's when he's completely bald with the mustache. His look is bonkers.
That's 05, right? That got to be earlier than that, maybe.
Around the back. You should go there and just look at it.
That's the tunnel days.
He looks crazy.
You know. With all the artists, though, there's some real mellow dudes like Half Pine and, you know, and like Junior Reed. All cats is cool, man. There's a lot of good people in the reggae game, a lot of good dudes. But you got to remember, just the environment where a lot of cats come from is street, and it's really, you know, economically, it's hard times. You know what I'm saying? So it is what it is. You got to be able to move and know, how to move with people.
Is there anyone, like, have you been in situations, when I went to Jamaica, I kicked it with Sean Paul. Sean Paul, for who he is still a regular, like, he gets noticed a lot, but he still lives a relatively regular-seeming life in Jamaica.
Like, I think he lives in a nice neighborhood, and he's pretty good.
He does.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, he knows.
He's a good guy. Sean's a real good dude. You know what I'm saying?
Is there people there who can't move around at all? Like, or is everyone cool down there? Is it just not the same?
No, hell no. There's gangs, and there's turf wars just like in Brooklyn and gangs and
trials. But I mean, as far as the artists being mobbed, where people go from beyond being cool with them to like they treat them the way people treat celebrities here.
Well, I think if certain artists, maybe if they go certain places, like if you go to a school or whatever, the kids would maybe mob them because, you know, they love the thing. You know what I'm saying? They love the artists. But I think also in Jamaica now, and ever since Jamaica got BET and everything, the infatuation with American culture has been a lot greater than maybe it was prior to BET. And that would have been probably, 97? Mm-hmm. Somewhere in that era, 98. Because I remember going to Jamaica and playing dances and stuff. And then it's the hip-hop influence and so forth, you know.
Now, on a straight hip-hop level, you got to be around every big hip-hop artist that's come through also.
Yeah.
What's the biggest hip-hop dub you think you got? 50?
50 with the Bounty Killer. Because we got 50 when 50 just got his first bust.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? With Many Sound, with Death Upon Me.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Then, yeah.
Why?
I voiced that for you. You're welcome.
That was your machine? No, we voiced that at Hot 97. You voiced the Bone Crusher.
Yeah, but I'm saying
that was your machine?
I told 50 to do it.
You did?
Yeah.
Well, I give you credit, sir.
No, he didn't.
Yes, I did.
I linked Flex, and I said, Flex, you got 50 coming? He said, yeah. I said, I'm there. I recorded it.
Yeah, but who do you think was picking up Flex's hamburgers?
Bobby, don't disrespect me. I hate Not getting my credit, yo.
Take your credit, Slave. You have it in
you
there?
You got the acapella? You got no. The massive beat dub? No, play no. The massive beat dub.
I don't have the massive
play it.
I got mine.
I know you got it.
No, I just got this.
Hey, yo, what's up? Yo, this is 50 Cent. With Cypher Sound. You know how it goes down. G-U-Net.
Listen to the gentleman I am on my dub. I want you to hear the gentleman that I am on my dub.
I
want to
hear this.
Yeah. Cypher Sound. Yeah. You gotta love it. Yeah. Ha ha. G-U-Net. Cypher Sound. We can get the drummer pop.
Here we go.
Listen.
It's going down with Cypher Sound. 50 Cent. You know how I get down. What up, Flex? What up, C? What up, Cypher? What up?
Well, I didn't have to give them a shout
out. Yeah, but why isn't the last one? What up, Bobby? Yeah. That's what I thought you were going to do.
His own. I was waiting for my big up.
Yeah, me too.
He got his own.
Oh, man.
He got his own.
You sound clean, though. I remember that, though.
You ever, we always ask people stories about being with the hip-hop legends, and I don't want to take that away either just because you're known for reggae, but do you ever get to be around Biggie, for example?
It's funny. I kick myself because I live three blocks from Biggie. I was on St. James and DeKalb, and I seen him in parties and so forth in 92 or 93 when he had the party and bullshit. That was mm-hmm. about 93, mm-hmm. 4, somewhere in
92,
there.
93.
Yeah. And I used to see him in parties, and you know we met him because me and Boro and Jabba used to be running. But I just never really took it upon myself. It was later, a couple of years later, that I decided to start getting hip-hop dubs. And then it was really around 96, 97, I decided I'm going to get some hip-hop dubs. That's when I got like Mobb Deep and Busta Rhymes and so forth, because we were going to Jamaica, and I just said, yo, I want to do something different at these dance. They had this dance, which they started called Fully Loaded, and we were representing New York. And I played, you know, so much gunshot fire in that. Like, it was outside thing.
Real gunshot fire.
Yeah, outside. So, but it was shots in the air, like, when you played your dub.
Yeah, shots in the air. Those bullets still got to come down, Bobby.
Yeah, but.
Where do they come down, Sife?
On people's heads.
Does it still hurt bad?
Yeah.
Have you ever any stories of this happening?
I heard people got hit in the heads with fucking shells and shit and bullets.
Well, because they came back down?
Yeah.
Because they shot straight up?
Where do you think it goes?
Just to the sky. Forever.
It goes away?
It goes away. It dissolves.
What's it like the first time you're playing a party and people actually take out guns and start shooting the sky?
I remember playing in Brooklyn. Cats was not, they wasn't, you know, cats was running. People was out. But in Jamaica, you're playing outdoor by the beach, thousands of people, and they hear that dub plate and Jabba's on the mic. Rah, 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 hyping up the place. And boy, you just hear that plop, 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 plop. And you just feel the vibes. I feel good. You know what I'm saying? I'm lining up the next record.
Who's the reggae artist that got killed like that? Eagle Mouse?
No. In Boston, but I think, son, I don't think that was a forward. Early B got killed in the dance.
Who?
Early B got killed in the dance in Boston.
Did Eagle Mouse get shot?
He might have got shot. He's alive, though.
Oh, so there's somebody that got killed.
Well, I know people got killed in dances.
This is what I heard. I forget who it is. Somebody was, they wanted to bust their gun in the air, but shot too early and killed the artist on stage.
Oh, I don't know that. Google that, yo.
I got to tell you, that's one of the ultimate biggest fails I've ever heard.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
But you didn't... Does that still happen? If you're playing outdoors in Jamaica, could you still get the shots still bust in the air? No, it's kind of...
I think that dance, the Fully Loaded before that, it was...
It really took Fully Loaded seriously.
Yeah.
It was crowded enough, you know, because that really comes from way, way back in the day when Boro and Super Cat and them used to be around the sound and, you know, and they'd be DJing, chatting their lyrics, and then the guys would be like, you know, and you'd hear like, blop, 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 and some real gunshots, and you hear like Super Cat or somebody say, yeah, man, I'm legal shot, you know, like... They real shots, you know what I'm saying? But they was busting their gun. The gangsters was busting their gun out of respect what the artist was saying.
Imagine Sife trying to explain that to someone who's never been in like ever even heard of the dancehall world whatsoever. Like, no, when people are really happy and they really like a song, that's when they take out an actual weapon and shoot it out of respect.
But up in the air.
In the air.
But coming from New York, if you hear gunshots in the dance, it's more or less time to leave.
I say, no, I don't say more or less. I say more.
More, 100% more.
Because you could, I mean, we played in dances where cats got laid out. You know what I'm saying?
I forget it.
What were you going to say?
No, it's too long.
How much more chill are things now?
I think it's just, like in Brooklyn or whatever, you know, certain places that, you know, it just, it could be hip hop, it could be Carib dances, or it could be yard dances. I mean, things happen, you know, but I mean, knock on wood, I mean, Safe Fire Sundays, we even had a fight and no problems in years.
Really?
You know what I'm saying?
It's just good vibes.
Well, what about, I don't know about all fights and gunshots.
You know, I don't,
I'm gonna tell you, my, since I delved into this reggae world back in the day, I had my little run. Bobby and Jabba showed me nothing but love, taught me the game. And then all the shit I've done for Bobby and Jabba, all of Jabba's birthdays, Bobby Conner's. I never did Bobby Conner's birthday.
The anniversary.
Christmas
anniversary.
Christmas party.
No, but you did the anniversary, I thought, too.
I did once, yeah. But mostly you always used to, it's like, it's funny, like they'll get like a set crew for each party. And I always did Jabba Strike Back, which is his birthday. And then I would do the Massive B holiday
bash
yeah. whatever. And then, yo, but like Eastern Parkway, Labor Day weekend. And then introducing me to all the artists, man. It was a fun time. Oh,
that's now he's talking about the West Indian Day Parade,
yeah.
which for about 9 years, me and Jabba, we would get a truck, a flatbed truck, a 48-foot, loaded up with a sound system, build a stage, and we'd have every artist on there.
Is that what you call it, a stage?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why, Sive?
I would call it a very rickety... a very rickety plywood platform.
How hot was the Massive B truck?
Oh, it had to go last or close to last.
Yeah, one of the hottest trucks.
Everything before that was like Soca.
One of the biggest parades in North America. So you're talking millions of people. So you're talking 10 to 20,000 just following that truck and then all up and down,
Eastern Parkway.
Eastern Parkway. And come on, we had Allison Hynes, Marshall, we had rappers on there, Little John and Foxy Brown and, you know, Bounty Man. Killer, Elephant Man, Sean Paul, Cartel. Beeman. If you ever want to see the parade, go type in, it's a song I produced. We did that video, Elephant Man, Wave Your Flags.
Oh, yeah.
And then you will see how the truck is and the parade is. And it was sick. It was sick. I mean, it's funny because I got sued in 04 by some lady because her hip got broken. She said, I'm responsible for her hip because my crowd was so big. And then finally got, the case got
thrown. Would you go as far as saying your crowd was massive?
That's
why I get paid the big bucks.
Exactly.
I want to see this video right now. Bobby, if people want to find your music online, what's the best way that they can legally find your music?
Go to iTunes, type in Massive B, type in the artist's name, or type in Bobby Conner's, you know what I'm saying? But I think it's more or less, you got to know the artist and the song title, and you go to iTunes, because the catalog is up on iTunes, at least 80% of it, I think.
I'm telling you right now, Bobby, I better be in this video.
I don't know. Were you there that year?
Of course. Get mad, represent on the fly. West Indian, wave your flags, then wave your hand, then wave your crown. I better be in this video, Bobby. I'm gonna raise hell. Somewhere in there. Me and you are fucking, me and you behind, what was the club in East New York? Not Albany Manor. What's the club in East New York by Kev's house?
Elite Arc?
Me and you behind Elite Arc
building
at 10 in the morning as they're still fucking nailing this shit together. Everybody from the Caribbean, there's something I'm with me see. Red, white, and blue, both of me, and represent your flag. Put up your flag, everybody, put up on your flag. White and black, every Trini represent Trinidad. Put up your flag, every Trini, put up the flag. So much so you want to the park where you get. Yeah, I was definitely on this truck.
I'm pretty sure they spelled Beanie Man's name wrong in the video.
Yeah, that's me.
Good job, Bob. I think it's EE.
The funny thing is, they weren't even really doing this song to the video. You just put this song over all the footage. Spice was on me. She wanted me.
She did?
Yeah, she wanted me.
What happened?
Puerto Rican dicklage.
Whoa.
All right,
Bobby, thank you so much, man. Not only thank you for doing our podcast, but thank you to you, and if Jabba ever hears this, Sive, enough. Turn the volume down while you look for yourself.
I better be in this.
and I don't know if Jabba will ever hear this, but I'll say it to him, too. Not only thank you for your contributions, but also thank you guys both for being two of the most welcoming people in my 8 years at Hot 97, who always was down to extend a hand and, you know, show love.
Thank you. Thanks for having
me. It's crazy.
Get at me on Instagram, Bobby Condors with a K, K-O-N-D-E-R-S.
How many times?
Facebook, Massive B, MassiveB.com, MassiveB.com. I'm doing a lot of remixes. I did the Omi remix that Hot 97's playing. I'm getting back into that Yankee thing. I'm doing some house music again, too, some EDM thing.
You should. The time
I'm
is down.
I'm trying to get some of that bread because the records ain't selling. I need to get some of this, you know what I mean?
And by the way, Bobby, if you come up here.
Some of this major laser money.
If you come up here and do not promote one event.
Well, every Sunday is every. We just had Massive B anniversary last week, Sunday.
Okay.
Cranium, Munga Honorable, Mr. Easy, so much people passed through. It was crazy. And then we have every Sunday, Fire Sundays at the Brooklyn Buzz, 103 Empire between Flatbush and Bedford. Big up Jabba, big up Boro Banton in Kingston, Jamaica, the original crew. Nothing changed. Cypher, big up yourself. Big up this beautiful young lady, boy. Hey, show me your kneecaps. It's all good.
Kneecaps on Fleek. You, kneecaps on Fleek.
There you go.
Shout out every member of Massive B.
We both go into the beach.
Facts.
I want every member of Massive B.
Name every member from day one?
Yeah.
Are the people that left the sound, are there people on it now?
Both.
Well, it was me and Jabba and Burro, you know what I'm saying? And then you had Ricky Indian, you had Chutney Shotter, you had Banky Hype, you have Major Hype, and X-Man, you had Big Dog, and now you have AK. But now, this Major Hype, obviously, is the Instagram sensation. Yeah. He toured with me for 5 years, but this past year, he's more or less doing his own thing with the Instagram thing and touring as the Caribbean comedian and doing all his characters. But now we have a new youth called AK.
Who's AK?
AK is a younger youth on the mic.
I don't know
every
him.
Every Sunday. Well, you don't even in the streets no more. You turn Hollywood.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, you're MTV3 or whatever.
Yeah, MTV7. MTV7.
You added another one to it. Yo, Bobby, thank you, man.
Thank you.
We'll catch y'all next week. One app. You know what I mean? Rosenberg Radio, Cypher Sounds, tweet us, and all that stuff. Good night.